Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Have we got... No sign of our guests.
Did you give him the right time?
Yes, mate. I'm just
checking.
How many N's in unnecessary? Let's try one. There we go.
No.
How many... Two. Let's try how many...
Two, otherwise it'd be unnecessary.
All right, shut up. How many C's in unnecessary?
One.
Right. How many S's in unnecessary?
Two.
Then how come it's got a red line underneath it? Oh, it hasn't now. By the way, this is the thing. We're expecting a guest 2 minutes ago from Canada, right? And here's the thing. He won't call in, and I'll tell you why. Something we discovered on the show yesterday. The show has been hexed. A curse has been put on the show because a psychic on Twitter offered to cure my depression by using a pendulum. London swing like a pendulum do. And I told her to get knotted. And then she blocked me. And last night's show was a car crash. And we think it was a car crash because she has put a hex on the show. So what we're really after, and Catherine has failed miserably in this job, miserably.
I think it's the hex.
Miserably. I asked Catherine yesterday. All she had to do was find us a psychic, a white witch, a warlock, or any one of those bullshiners that pretends to have magic powers to lift the curse from the show, right?
I said this.
Who have you got?
They'll be treated respectfully and without mockery.
Who
I hope they're not listening now.
Who have you got?
I contacted five of my magical contacts.
Yep.
One's watching a play.
Right.
One wanted to know more and then disappeared, probably literally.
Okay.
The three.
Nothing.
Flaked.
So here's the thing. The tonight's show is going to be a car crash, as just like last night's show, unless we get someone who's got the gift, the sixth sense, the all-seeing eye. Do you remember that band, the all-seeing eye?
No.
Okay. To come on the show and lift the curse. We need an exorcism. We need a curse lifted. 0344-499-1000. I'm not even doing a thing now. This is an actual, genuine thing. The show is cursed and we need help. 0344-499-1000.
Could you smudge us? Could you give us a cleansing healing chant or something?
You're talking about Susan and her foo-foo. That needs cleansing and healing. Okay. Now, listen, very, very exciting, OK? We talk quite a bit on this show. They seem to keep popping up every now and then. The kids in the hall. Remember when we had Stephen Page in, the brilliant Stephen Page? And he had Kevin Fox on the cello and he had Craig, as they say, Craig Northey on the guitar. And we're all kind of mooning over Stephen Page because we love the Bare Naked Ladies. Who doesn't? People Without Souls, that's who. And then Craig kind of let it slip that he'd work with the kids in the hall. Well, Stephen Page was out the door. Sorry, Mr. Page, we don't need you anymore. I want to speak to this guy.
And Stephen Page understood.
He got it. He realised that Craig was the biggest star. Love Kids in the Hall. And a brand new book has come out about them. And I must have been so excited by this book. I've ordered it twice from Amazon. It's rocked up. It rocked up 2 days ago and then it rocked up today. So I've got a spare copy and I'm more than happy. I can't be bothered to send it back. I'm more than happy to give away the second copy of The Kids in the Hall, One Dumb Guy. It's the authorised biography by Paul Myers. I'm more than happy to give that away. 0344-499-1000. I think via the magic of internet technology, Paul, who wrote this book, should be on the line now. Afternoon, evening, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's about 2:20 in California here. I live in Northern California, not to be confused with LA. I live near Oakland, across from San Francisco.
Oh, man alive. This guy. Go on. What is the weather like?
It's, I've lost my Celsius. It's something like, I'm just looking for you to get an accurate reading. It's about 62 degrees Fahrenheit here.
Jeez, doesn't it make you,
which
it
is,
make you sick?
Yeah.
Make you
it's a little warmer with the Trump.
Hey, man, let me get this right. Are you Canadian?
I am a Canadian dual citizen. I'll never not be Canadian. I have my Canadian citizenship, but I for reasons of voting and such, I was able to become a U.S. citizen just in time for the worst time to be an American citizen.
You had to become an American citizen because you were so keen to get Trump into the White House. And well done, Paul. It's worked. Your dreams come true. What a weird time for you guys. We'll talk about the book in a second, I promise. But I love the fact that there's now this... there's accusations that the White House has put out a video of that's been doctored, the one of the journalist supposedly assaulting the staff member.
Oh,
incredible.
I watched that on TV. I watched it when it happened, and then they released a video later that's almost like night and day. It's it's the kind of stuff you would expect from the Kremlin. I mean... maybe that's where it's from.
I've not seen the doctored version. I missed it. I've seen the original. I will look at it. What is the difference? What have they? Has he got like nunchuckers or something?
If you want to know what they did was, yeah, that's right. They added in some ultimate fighting footage. No. What they did was they sped up part of it to make it look like CNN journalist Jim Acosta had swung at the arm of the young intern. With all she was doing was grabbing the mic, and he said, "Excuse me, ma'am, I'm asking a question," which is like the most gentlemanly assault you're going to get. And it was absolutely no assault. And basically his motion was pulling away from her rather than towards her. And it's just Trump doing more misinformation. He's really clearly upset that he has to be accountable now that the House is Democrat again. And he's upset that Jim Acosta keeps asking him questions, which – almost nobody else in the press corps has the nerve to do. And so he's a problem. He's a problem to – I wouldn't be surprised if Acosta's brakes fail magically too.
This is it. I'm surprised more people aren't getting bumped off over there. As you know, our royal family over here have a grand history of murdering people they don't like. So Trump needs to pick up on that. Anyway, listen, Paul Myers.
Let's get on to the happier stuff.
Well, happiness, I'm sure there's some darkness in it. I love the kids in the hall, man. They were shown over here sort of, I'm trying to think, early 90s on Channel 4, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was never on a regular day. You'd kind of have to look through the listings and it would be there and you would set your videos. So they have even more of a cult status over here than they probably do in Canada and America.
In the US, yeah.
Now, why did you... What's your connection with them? Why did you decide to write this book?
It's kind of amazing. I write about music. I actually wrote, you mentioned the Bare Naked Ladies. I was a musician in the Toronto scene, a contemporary of Stephen Page and a contemporary of Craig Northey.
Wow.
And I had a band called the Gravelberries. And this is to answer your question, by the way. I'm actually answering it. So at that time on Queen Street West in Toronto, it was very much the scene, you know. It was where the bands and the comedians and everybody, it was very post-New Wave, and all the English bands would come there and all the American bands would come there. And as well as we had like a comedy scene, which was basically centered on the Kids in the Hall. They had basically started, and they were a rock comedy troupe. They didn't play rock music themselves, but in between sketches, they would play The Jam and Buzzcocks. And it was very much, angry young comedy. And so I wrote the Bare Naked Ladies' first biography, their biography that they asked me to write. It does relate because when I became a writer, I started writing stuff. I started writing my fan club newsletter for my band, the Gravelberries. Really liked writing.
Yeah.
Started writing articles about music, and then the kids and then the Bare Naked Ladies were like having their big success in 1990. I think it was 1998. They started having like a number one hit record. They were about to have a number one hit record in the States, the United States.
Yeah.
And so they contacted me. I moved to San Francisco, and they said, you're a writer, but you know us. You should write you should be our point man to write the official biography. And so I wrote this book called Private Stunts, Public Stories.
It's a good book. I've read it. I've got it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, that was my first book, and that got me into writing books. And it was definitely written sort of to hire. Like they hired me, and it was a fan club kind of. Are you still getting me, by the way?
I'm lapping up every word of this. Don't you worry,
no,
Paul.
I'm getting up, but I'm also getting. I was just getting a little flash internet message saying that it was going slow. Anyway, I'm not going slow. You can tell.
You're going very fast. I like
it. I'm very caffeinated. Plus, they charge by the minute on Skype. So, So anyway, I'm really cutting to the chase. That went really well for me in terms of opening up a career for me. I wrote a book about Long John Baldry, who many people in England wouldn't know, but he discovered Elton John. He was a musician in the London scene of the 60s. And he discovered Elton John and Rod Stewart, amongst other things, and was a contemporary friend of the early Rolling Stones. So I wrote his biography because he died in Canada in 2006 he died. And I wrote that. And then I wrote a book about Todd Rundgren, and I was over in the UK. It was a UK publisher actually produced, Jawbone Press.
Yeah.
And I did a little press in London around that time too. And so that led me to finally in 2015, I'd known the kids in the hall their entire career from the scene. I was at their early club dates on Queen Street. I was at their taping of their TV show at CBC Television. The CBC, which is like the BBC.
Yeah.
It's like the big, they put cultural money into things. And I was also on the set of their film Brain Candy. And then I've been at several of their reunion tours over the last decade or two.
Yeah.
And so it seemed logical that now that I know how to write a biography, thanks again to the Bare Naked Ladies and others, I said, you guys have been almost at this 30 years. This is a couple years ago. It's 30 years coming, actually. So about 2 years ago, I said, you guys, it's about time that I did this book. I kind of said it like Jerry Seinfeld like that. And and they had said no earlier. They said they didn't feel comfortable doing a book. And I eventually convinced them that I was at the right time in my career as a writer. They were at the right time in their career together. And so I began the process that led to this book, One Dumb Guy. There's the answer. I got to the end of the answer.
Stop the clock. That's a world record for the longest answer to a first question in an interview ever. Well done. I only got this book the other day, Paul, so I want to be honest. I haven't read it yet, but
it's great. It's great. I can tell. Don't read it. It's great.
I'm very, very excited about it. I'm just flicking through the pictures. My God, is there anything sexier than Bruce McCulloch, Mark McKinney and David Foley dressed up as Sex Girl Patrol? Look at those, Catherine.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, they're hot. They're hot women. The Monty Python were never hot as women, but the kids in the hall, they are hot chicks.
Well, it's funny you should say that because the openly gay member of the troupe, Scott Thompson, said that a lot of professed heterosexual crew members would get visibly uncomfortable at Dave Foley dressed as a woman and challenging their beliefs of their own sexuality. And I actually I also felt like Dave was a beautiful woman. Mm. I remember being on set and seeing him as Jocelyn, the French Canadian sex worker.
Yeah.
And it's like he's the kind of girl you want to marry.
How big were kids in the hall in their prime? Have I got this right that they were big in Canada, and the show was kind of a cult in the States, and it wasn't until the reruns that they actually got quite huge.
Yeah, there's a network here called Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And it's where The Daily Show with Jon Stewart originated and Key and Peele. And all the – so originally they didn't have much content. And the Kids in the Hall had gone off the air in 1995-ish. And they were just starting up in 2000. They were just getting their legs in the late 90s. So Comedy Central needed programming. So they would program reruns of Saturday Night Live, NBC show. And then they would also program the Kids in the Hall. And by then it was, the series was gone, but they had like five seasons to draw from. They put them on every night in, a half hour version. Yeah, it was half hour. And it was a half hour of Saturday Night Live. No, an hour of Saturday Night Live and half hour of the Kids in the Hall. A lot of kids, young adults who were coming home from school and stuff would end up seeing it. It was also rebroadcast several times a day,
right?
Because they didn't have much content.
Yeah.
So it became almost hypnotic. The way when I was a kid, I used to watch Bugs Bunny cartoons because they were always on.
Yeah.
And I think if Bugs Bunny was real and showing up somewhere at a mall, I would probably want his autograph.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Bugs Bunny for that reason. So imagine the kids in the hall are somebody's Bugs Bunny. And then, much like, that quote about the Velvet Underground, that not many people bought their records, but every person who heard the band formed a band of their own.
Yeah, of course.
Well, there's a lot of comedians in America, especially right now, who got the Kids in the Hall that way, like Fred Armisen. I think the guys who make the films for Key and Peele said in an interview that I didn't do the interview, but it was in my book that, they based their film style on the quality of the Kids in the Hall's film style. And Different guys like Jonah Ray, who's on Mystery Science Theater 3000, said that he used to run home from school and, you know, the kids in the hall made him want to be a comedian. And it's just like a lot of people like that, Judd Apatow, Paul Feig, like two big names in comedy now, were like blown away by the kids in the hall. And but they were actually followers from the beginning. Like they were watching it on HBO. And it's amazing how many American comedians come up to me and say, thank you for writing a book about the kids in the hall, because they were kind of my troop.
Experience the unconventional,
evening, boss.
The unpredictable,
what's happening?
And the completely unorthodox.
Exactly.
With rule-free Ian Lee, the late night alternative with Ian Lee.
I've got no internet for the last 4 days.
On Talk Radio.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Jamie East. Now, as well as being on Talk Radio every afternoon between 1 and 4pm, I've just started a brand new podcast that I wanted to tell you about. It's called Talk Film. We've got interviews with the big stars like Martin Freeman, Tandy Newton, Josh Brolin, loads of them. And also all of the reviews of the week's big releases. There's a new episode every Thursday, available through Apple Podcasts and your favourite podcast app. Just search for Talk Film and give it a whirl. If you like it, please hit that subscribe button.
Experience the unconventional,
evening, boss.
The unpredictable,
what's happening?
And the completely unorthodox,
exactly.
With rule-free Ian Lee, the late-night alternative with Ian Lee.
I've got no internet for the last 4 days.
On Talk Radio.
I love, you know, I was one of a small band in my school or college who would watch it and would get excited when it was on. And I love the fact that a lot of their sketches kind of don't have punchlines. They just sort of peter out. A lot of them are ridiculous. I still quote to this day, The Eradicator.
I love that.
Such a good sketch. This guy that wants to beat everyone at squash.
My favorite joke in that is when he's saying, you know, prepare to die from the Eradicator. And then he says, okay, I'll play you on Tuesday. And then the Eradicator looks at his little date book and says, Tuesday is not good for the Eradicator. Which that's Python, too. That's a very Python. The kids in the hall basically took the element of the five-man troupe that some on film, some in the studio, that Python had, and that effect of the absurdity. And then they translated it into their time.
Yeah.
Instead of London in the late 60s and early 70s, they were Toronto in the late 80s, early 90s. And somehow there's a Canadian thing that isn't so tied to the Canadian, like they don't do Mountie sketches, but if you lived in Canada at that time, as I did, you would say, oh, I know that. I know that scene. That's just the same way that maybe Python would have had a sketch about the tobacconist or the cheese shop. We, you know, and of course we're all huge Python fans. Yeah. So someone posted a picture that they bought Eric Idle's new book and my book about the kids in the hall. And they posted a picture of the two of them together. And it blew my mind.
That's the book I'm finishing reading is the Eric Idle book. And as soon as that one's done, yours is the next book I'm reading.
Well, I'm honored to go second after Eric Idle. I think that kids
seem to be like the missing link. But let's get geeky for a second, Wolf, for the whole thing. The missing link I love it. The missing link over here between Monty Python and the Fast Show. I'm guessing you're aware of the Fast Show.
Oh, the Fast Show.
I'm thinking of, you know, that I crush your head. And there's quite a few sketches from the kids in the hall that would sit very comfortably in the Fast Show. You know, very catchphrase. I'm crushing your head. Wonderful kind of recurring characters.
So do you remember, I can't remember the lineage. When did the Fast Show, when was it on TV?
I think the Fast Show was when I was at college. So that would have been, I'm going to say 93, oh. I'm going to say. Catherine's okay. Googling it.
94 to 97.
I wasn't
okay.
Far
so
out.
they were coexisting yeah. with the British the Canadian TV show was like 1988ish to 1995.
Yeah.
Or the, I mean 1990. Yeah, it was like the first 5 years of the 90s. So they would have been happening at the same time. I wasn't sure about the lineage of that. That's true. That's a good point.
Do they like each other? I always get the feeling that there's a kind of tension between them.
Well, imagine you're talking about Oasis,
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
And they're brothers. At the end of the day, it's like, you know, he's our kid, but I hate him. But yeah. then I love him.
Yeah.
But also, if you insult one of the other guys, they're the first guy to defend.
Right.
So they're a five-man organism. And each one within, they have the right to have an argument with each other at any given time, but no one else can. So they are brothers by choice and brothers by what's the word? Attrition. Mm. You know, they've been together, working together for 30 years. Every possible fight they could ever have, they pretty much had. And they faced death. They literally faced death together with Scott got very ill.
Scott Thompson was yeah. dying, wasn't he? They were filming their last series.
And the series was called Death Comes to Town. So
wow.
it was like, and the book is filled with these moments. Somebody else told me this in an interview because I just did Canadian, I had a bunch of dates in Canada. And one of the guys said to me, he goes, this looks like the story of the Kids in the Hall is the story of will they break up now?
Yes.
Is this what's going to do it? And then ultimately you come to the, I mean, it's an ongoing story. They're still planning some new things in the new year. But the ultimate conclusion is, I guess not. I guess they're not going to break up because nothing could break them up.
Mm.
You know, and the other story I think is about them is a story of how they screw up every group decision they've ever made.
This is what I wanted to talk about. They keep getting things wrong.
Yeah, and that's why the book's called One Dumb Guy. It's a Kevin MacDonald of the Kids in the Hall said, you know, we're actually pretty smart guys individually, but together we're one dumb guy.
They make so many wrong turns in there. I mean, I went to see Brain Candy. It got such a limited release over here, their movie. And I was there with my sister, a flatmate, and there was one other guy, four people in a cinema. And I wanted to love it, and I did love it at the time. And then I watched it a couple of years later on video. And there are some great ideas. There are some great scenes in there. But it just doesn't quite work, and you think, come on, you could have made a Holy Grail here. You could have made a Life of Brian. And what was that? Was that too many different opinions at the same time?
Yeah, there was a lot going on. The first you have to know is that when they were writing the film, two of the family members of two of the kids in the hall had died by suicide.
Oh wow!
So it's already pretty dark.
Gosh.
And the room they were writing in. Kevin dubbed it the boardroom of death because every time they would meet, they would say, oh, I just found out that my brother-in-law committed suicide Scott Thompson's brother actually also committed suicide. And then there was that. And then the other aspect of death was about their career because Dave Foley had, I don't know if you got it over there. There's a hit TV series called News Radio.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Big
and Dave Foley had been picked to be the star of this show. It was built around him. And this was a time when, you know, the other guys, the series had ended and they were about to do their movie. And their plan was to do like Python movies, to do like their Holy Grail, their Life of Brian. But while they're making this film, there's all those deaths that I mentioned. And then there's this thing where Dave wants to reschedule. He wants to shoot the film a year later because there's a lot going on for him.
Mm.
The other guys kind of resent that and admit to it now. And then there's all these things going on, tensions. Dave and Kevin, who were the best friends originally, they'd been together even longer than the kids in the hall, they were completely not speaking to each other. And then somehow contractually, they had to make the movie. They finished the screenplay. They kicked around. In my book, you'll see there's all these great ideas that they didn't do.
Yeah, yeah.
And like there's a whole bunch. There's one that I really love called Boat Full of Cowards or Ship Full of Cowards. It's like a Navy drama or Navy comedy, but like everyone on the boat shouldn't be on the boat except for this one drill sergeant played by I think Mark.
Brilliant.
And they didn't make that movie. And then they decided Prozac was new at the time, and of course they're talking about these themes of depression, and at the time Prozac was being sold as an antidepressant that just cured sadness.
Yeah.
Like they didn't really explain it in a nuanced way, so people were calling it the happy pill.
Yeah.
And so they like to make fun of big business, and they like to make fun of sort of pop psychology. So they decided that they would make this movie that they were going to call The Drug, and it later became known as Brain Candy. But the film was kind of dark. It was a dark theme about people being depressed.
Kind of dark. There's a guy in there. There's a kid in there in a wheelchair called Cancer Boy. And one of my favorite lines is this mum comes home to her young kids. Hi, kids. Where's your dad? Oh, he's upstairs masturbating to gay porn. It's a dark movie, man.
Well, and there's even a scene in it where one of the kids remembers a childhood memory of his father walking in and clumsily attempt, and you just see the window of the house, and you just hear the sound effects of him, of the father clumsily trying to kill himself, and keeps missing with at close range, which would not sound funny. It doesn't sound funny in description, but when you see it in the movie, and you just hear Kevin McDonald going, "I can't believe I missed again," you know, again, very Python, very much like Meaning of Life Python, you know, the dark scenes of death. And because, you know, Meaning of Life is one of the darkest Python films ever.
Oh,
right?
I can't watch that. I haven't seen that for years and years and years because it is so grim. I mean, there are a few joyous moments in it, but the whole, you know, the war, Mr. Creosote, the sex education, the Salmon Moose. It's a dark movie, man. I didn't know the Salmon Moose.
Also, their American accents, that almost killed me. But anyway, we're digressing. So they make that, and you mentioned Cancer Boy, and that's the other thing that they did wrong.
Yeah.
They stand by the film, but I mean, they admit that made it hard. So, you know, when you make a major motion picture with a Paramount, you basically are getting one shot, and you know, American movies have to open fairly big. Yeah. They have to at least make back their money. And they made this film, and at one point they're shooting this scene. And if you don't know what we're talking about, listening, there's a scene with a bald-headed kid, and it's a parody of all of those things where sometimes the charity kid gets a little high on himself and wants to meet every celebrity and gets a little – and God bless the kids who are in that position. But the idea of, like, you know, he's entitled and he's a little bit pushy. And so they wanted to make fun of him, of a guy who would say, you know, like, I have cancer. You know, and it's not even funny as I tell it now. But at the same time, it was kind of a thing that fit the theme of the movie, people dealing with depression. And they insisted on having this film, and they had to call him Cancer Boy, which was kind of made you know that it was a parody character. Well, of course, these are things these are third rails. You don't touch these, you know.
I remember laughing at that character at the time. And then I remember watching it again and thinking, "Ooh, no. I couldn't believe that I laughed at it." And I just thinking, nah, they shouldn't have put that in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what happened. So they were fighting for it. The Paramount, who were distributing the film, and, you know, their big shot at the U.S. market, they would have been happy for a moderate weekend with a cult film, but no. So he gets Paramount gets on the phone with Lorne Michaels says you should cut. Lorne Michaels is their producer who produced Saturday Night Live as well, and Lorne Michaels says, you know, I think you should cut the Cancer Boy thing. It would make it easier. And then and the troupe had a conversation, and they said, it's our comedy. We're doing it our way.
Yeah.
So God bless them. You know, God bless them. They created this impediment to their own success and stood by it, and they fought for it, and they got on the phone with a Paramount executive and said, I'm sorry, we're doing this. And so, of course, they say, well, great, you know, there goes your promotion budget. We're not going to sell it. And then Siskel and Ebert were very popular film critics at the time. And Ebert said it was the worst film ever made. And,
wowzers.
You know, Siskel defended it. But then one of the big New York Times critics also said it was a joyless exercise. And so any kind of crossover audience they would have had other than their hardcore base just didn't come, and it didn't stay in the theaters very long. So cinemas, you know. So yeah. So yeah, so it was a little bit of a career, another one dumb guy move, really.
Paul, listen, I've tweeted the book, and I will tweet all the links and all the places you can get it again. Final thing, are they going to do any more? Just when everyone thinks they've stopped doing stuff, they'll do another live tour, or they'll do that series they did a few years ago. I read somewhere that they might be doing something for Netflix.
It's not specifically named for Netflix yet, but they've been talking as they often do. They're talking amongst themselves to get a thing. Like, they need to have a thing. They're probably going to do some more touring, and they want to write another original series because it's been about 8 years since the last one.
Wow, okay.
And you know, right now Mark is on a hit American TV show called Superstore, and, you know, and they're all doing various things. Bruce is kind of a professor right now for the year in Toronto. And Scott's got this Buddy Cole thing that he's doing. It's a character of his. He kind of tours with it. And they're all busy, and so they're going to try and pencil in something to do together. And in the current climate, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, yeah, they're the kind of places you take stuff. So you make a short series like Mr. Show did years ago. Make a short 5 or 6 episode series that goes viral, or it goes bingey. You know, you can binge it.
Bingey.
And then it goes bingey. He's gone all bingey, I'm afraid. And then that would be good. And then they could just do a contained, it could be a sketch comedy all the way through it, or it could be one story the way Death Comes to Town was. I hope they do it. I'm actually hoping that my little book's going to help them, sort of like stay in the public eye and get the money that they would love to get to do it right. You know, I don't want to pretend that I'm going to be the guy who helps them, but certainly I didn't write the book because I didn't want to help them, you know? So I'm happy that people will be talking about the Kids in the Hall now and getting the whole story about how important they are.
Paul, it's so nice to talk to you, man. I'm so glad we sorted this out. The book is The Kids in the Hall, One Dumb Guy, Paul Myers. I've got a copy. If you want a copy, dear listener, first person to phone up and tell me that you want it, 0344-499-1000. Paul, if they do some live shows, I've decided I'm coming over to see them, so I may get to shake your hand and thank you for this.
Hopefully I'll be there. I'd love to. Wouldn't it be great if they went to England? But anyway, okay, thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Paul.
For the time.
Take care, brother.
Bye.
Thank you very much. 0344-499-1000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A radio star is born.
You're going to love
Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.